The last two times I spoke about the Quran, I mentioned that I originally read the Quran for myself because I didn't trust the overly simplistic and heavily politicized media narratives about what was in the Quran. I also mentioned that looking at the primary sources and researching some historical and literary context is generally much more useful and accurate than the media coverage of Islam. And in relation to the topic of this particular podcast, I'll add that it's much more accurate than even many Western scholarly perspectives on Islam, because many Western scholars have ideological reasons for emphasizing only the parts of the evidence that fit their preferred narrative about Islam, whether that narrative is overwhelmingly negative or generally positive. I covered in my previous podcast what the Quran says about Jesus, son of Mary. In this podcast, I'll be discussing what the Quran says about Jesus' people, the Jews, his followers, the Christians, and unbelievers in general. There are plenty of references to unbelievers in the Quran, and I won't have time to read all of them to you, but I will try to share with you as many as practically possible. I don't want to leave out anything that detracts from understanding the complicated set of statements in the Quran about Jews, Christians, and other religious groups. One thing I should mention before I get too far into this is that I am not an expert in Quranic studies. I am not an authoritative source of information about Islam, though I try to learn from reading the Quran, reading various Islamic perspectives on the Quran, and reading the Hadith. I am continuing to read and learn about the Quran and related subjects like Islamic law and its basis in the Hadith, as well as Islamic mystical traditions. If you want to know more about the Quranic passages, 7th century religious groups, and Hebrew prophetic figures I will be mentioning in this podcast, please see the link to my blog, where you can find links that will take you to additional information on those points, as I read and comment on the portions of the Quran which reference unbelievers. And if you want to know which interpretation and translation of the Quran I used, that's available on the sources page of my blog. There are many references to unbelievers, a word sometimes rendered as infidels in the Quran, and because some of them are in the same passages as the passages about Jesus, or immediately following those passages, I would like to examine those first as an extension of my previous work on what the Quran says about Jesus. Also, in previous passages, it was made clear that Christians who believe that Jesus is the Son of God are understood to be unbelievers, and Jews are understood to be covenant breakers. I'll begin where I left off last time in the House of Imran surah, with the passage immediately following the laying of God's curse upon the unbelievers who lie about God when they say he has a son. Say, people of the book, come now to a word common between us and you, that we serve none but God, and that we associate not aught with him, and do not some of us take others as lords apart from God. And if they turn their backs, say, bear witness that we are Muslims. People of the book, why do you dispute concerning Abraham? The Torah was not sent down, neither the gospel, but after him. What, have you no reason? Ha, you are the ones who dispute on what you know. Why then dispute you touching a matter of which you know not anything? God knows, and you know not. No, Abraham in truth was not a Jew, neither a Christian, but he was a Muslim, and one pure of faith. Certainly he was never of the idolaters. Surely the people standing closest to Abraham are those who followed him, and this prophet, and those who believe, and God is the protector of the believers. There is a party of the people of the book yearn to make you go astray, yet none they make to stray except themselves, but they are not aware. People of the book, why do you disbelieve in God's signs, which you yourselves witness? People of the book, why do you confound the truth with vanity, and conceal the truth, and that wittingly? One interesting thing about this passage is that we see an epistemological argument being made, specifically that because the people of the book don't know what God knows, the only plausible alternative is to believe what God reveals in the Quran. This reminds me of other arguments I hear made pretty regularly on various topics, arguments in which a person's ignorance is cited as a reason to believe the claims of another person. That's not a very good argument from a formal, rational standpoint, but it is sometimes persuasive because most of us prefer certainty to uncertainty, and it's easier to take the offer of irrational certainty than to accept a rational uncertainty about a given claim. We also see in this Quranic passage that there is a reiteration of the idea that Christians and Jews are lying about God and doing so knowingly, that they disbelieve in God's clear signs. We also see a very common assertion that the prophets of old were actually Muslims, and that Islam is a return to the pure monotheism of Abraham, or Ibrahim in Arabic. Those who kept to the Abrahamic monotheism or had returned to it were known as reverts, Hanif in Arabic, and were generally respected by the early Islamic community for maintaining the ancient truth, which had been corrupted by the Christians and the Jews. Though the Christians and Jews feature frequently among those considered to be unbelievers, they aren't the only ones singled out. In the surah called the Kaw, Al-Baqara in Arabic, there's another group that gets mentioned during an admonition that follows a discourse about Moses and the Israelites who followed him out of Egypt and through the desert. But before I get to that other religious group, I'll begin by reading the first passages of that surah, the Kaw. In the name of God, the merciful, the compassionate, that is the book, wherein is no doubt a guidance to the God-fearing who believe in the unseen and perform the prayer and expend of what we have provided them, who believe in what has been sent down to thee and what has been sent down before thee, and have faith in the hereafter. Those are guidance from their Lord. Those are the ones who prosper. As for the unbelievers, alike it is to them whether thou hast warned them or hast not warned them. They do not believe. God has set a seal on their hearts, and on their hearing, and on their eyes is a covering. And there awaits them a mighty chastisement. And some men there are who say, we believe in God and the last day, but they are not believers. They would trick God and the believers, and only themselves they deceive, and they are not aware. in their hearts is a sickness, and God has increased their sickness, and there awaits them a painful chastisement, for that they have cried lies. When it is said to them, "Do not corruption in the land," they say, "We are the only ones that put things right." Truly, they are the workers of corruption, but they are not aware. When it is said to them, "Believe as the people believe," they say, "Shall we believe as fools believe?" Truly, they are the foolish ones, but they do not know. When they meet those who believe, they say, "We believe." But when they go privily to their satans, they say, "We are with you. We were only mocking." God shall mock them, and shall lead them on blindly, wandering in their insolence. Those are they that have bought error at the price of guidance, and their commerce has not profited them, and they are not right guided. The cow is the first surah in the Quran after the opening prayer, and it starts with God speaking of believers and unbelievers, echoing some things that come up in other passages of the Quran about unbelievers being punished harshly. In this surah, the Quranic narrative depicts a God who makes unbelievers remain in their unbelief. Somewhat reminiscent of passages in the Tanakh regarding God hardening Pharaoh's heart. The first set of unbelievers described in this passage are those who claim to be believers, but are deluded about their being true believers and are lying to God. Also, these unbelievers are depicted as publicly professing belief, while privately mocking the true belief in the one God, and mocking those who submit to God alone, Muslims, as fools. Another interesting point is that in these passages, a lack of awareness of knowledge of one's own errors does not in any way mitigate the seriousness of the consequences that follow from those errors. There is no equivalent of Jesus' request in the Gospels, "Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do." In the Quran, ignorance does not prevent the painful chastisement that awaits unbelievers, and maybe it shouldn't. We often don't let ignorance of the law function as a mitigating factor in the criminal justice system in our society, after all. Shortly after this passage in the surah, the cow, it is made clear that what awaits those who are unbelievers and the doubters is not fun. And I'll read that passage now. "And if you are in doubt concerning that we have sent down on our servant, then bring a surah like it, and call your witnesses apart from God, if you are truthful. And if you do not, and you will not, then fear the fire, whose fuel is men and stones, prepared for unbelievers. Give thou good tidings to those who believe and do deeds of righteousness, that for them await gardens underneath which rivers flow. Whensoever they are provided with fruits therefrom, they shall say, 'This is that wherewithal we were provided before.' And there for them shall be spouses purified. Therein they shall dwell forever." As I've mentioned previously, the fire is another term for Jahannam, the Islamic word for hell. That's where the unbelievers will be going, but the believers have a paradise prepared for them. And within it, they will have married love indefinitely, and a restoration of the rich bounty of the Garden of Eden. This paradise is referenced many times in the Quran, and the phrases often use the word garden in them, or simply refer to them as the garden, al-Jannah, in Arabic. Shortly after this passage in the Kaw Surah, the topic shifts to the Garden of Eden and Adam's sin after being tempted by Satan. I'll now read from the middle portion of that passage that mentions Adam. And we said, Adam, dwell thou and thy wife in the garden, and eat thereof easefully where you desire, but draw not nigh this tree, lest you be evildoers. Then Satan caused them to slip therefrom, and brought them out of that they were in. And we said, Get you all down, each of you an enemy of each, and in the earth sojourn shall be yours, and enjoyment for a time. Thereafter Adam received certain words from his Lord, and he turned towards him. Truly he turns, and is all compassionate. We said, Get you down out of it altogether. Yet there shall come to you guidance from me, and whosoever follows my guidance, no fear shall be on them, neither shall they sorrow. As for the unbelievers who cry lies to our signs, those shall be inhabitants of the fire, therein dwelling forever. Children of Israel, remember my blessing wherewith I blessed you, and fulfill my covenant, and I shall fulfill your covenant, and have awe of me. And believe in that I have sent down, confirming that which is with you, and be not the first to disbelieve in it. And sell not my signs for a little price, and fear you me. And do not confound the truth with vanity, and do not conceal the truth wittingly. And perform the prayer, and pay the alms, and bow with those that bow. Will you bid others to piety, and forget yourselves while you recite the book? Do you not understand? Seek you help in patience and prayer, for grievous it is, save to the humble who reckon that they shall meet their Lord, and that unto him they are returning. Children of Israel, remember my blessing wherewith I blessed you, and that I have preferred you above all beings, and beware of a day when no soul for another shall give satisfaction, and no intercession shall be accepted from it, nor any counterpoise be taken, neither shall they be helped. The Quranic narrative about the loss of the Garden of Eden, to which faithful Muslims will be restored at the end of all things, is followed by a series of admonitions to the Jews that recognizes their status as God's chosen people and exhorts them to not break their covenant with God. In other parts of the Quran, it is made very clear that the Jews have indeed broken the covenant and that this will have serious consequences for them. One interesting point in this passage is that the continued efficacy of the temple sacrifices made by the Jews is explicitly denied. In this passage, God says that there will come a day when the sacrifices no longer matter, and he will not provide any help to those who make them. I'm not aware that there are any sacrifices that happen in what's left of the temple in Jerusalem, so perhaps that day has come. The Surah the Kaw continues on with the story of Moses leading the Israelites out of Egypt. The golden calf idol, the manna and the quails that God provided, and Moses striking the rock to bring forth water because of their complaints. This is followed by another passage about the Jews and others, and I'll go ahead and read that passage of the Cow Surah that discusses Jews and their unbelief. And abasement and poverty were pitched upon them, and they were laden with the burden of God's anger, that because they had disbelieved the signs of God and slain the prophets unrightfully, that because they disobeyed and were transgressors. Surely they that believe, and those of Jewry, and the Christians, and those Sabaeans, whoso believes in God and the last day, and works righteousness, their wage awaits them with their Lord, and no fear shall be on them, neither shall they sorrow. When the Quran mentions the Sabaeans, it could be referring to a variety of different religious groups, and it's difficult to know for sure which group or set of religious groups it would mean. They could have been Gnostics of some stripe or members of another Abrahamic faith. I personally tend to think that the latter explanation is more likely, but I could well be wrong. What is more obvious is that the Quranic narratives repeatedly mention the disobedience of the Jews and their breaking of the covenant and killing of the prophets. At the same time, it seems that the Quran is indicating that righteous people among the Jews, Christians, and Sabaeans have a reward awaiting them from God. But that's not a wholehearted endorsement of those religious groups by any stretch of the imagination. In the surah The Table, Al-Ma'idah in Arabic, Muslims are admonished to keep a certain distance from them. I'll go ahead and read that passage for you now. O believers, take not Jews and Christians as friends. They are friends of each other. Whoso of you makes them his friends is one of them. God guides not the people of the evildoers. Yet thou seest those in whose hearts is sickness, vying with one another to come to them, saying, We fear lest a turn of fortune should smite us. But it may be that God will bring the victory, or some commandment from him, and then they will find themselves, for that they kept secret within them, remorseful. And the believers will say, What, are these the ones who swore by God most earnest oaths, that they were with you? Their works have failed. Now they are the losers. O believers, whosoever of you turns from his religion, God will assuredly bring a people he loves, and who love him, humble toward the believers, disdainful towards the unbelievers, men who struggle in the path of God, not fearing the reproach of any reproacher. That is God's bounty. He gives it unto whom he will, and God is all-embracing, all-knowing. Your friend is only God and his messenger and the believers who perform the prayer and pay the alms and bow them down. Whoso makes God his friend and his messenger and the believers the party of God, they are the victors. O believers, take not as your friends those of them who were given the book before you, and the unbelievers who take your religion in mockery and as a sport. That is because they are a people who have no understanding. This passage from the Table Surah continues on with an extended discourse about the Jews, and it might, at least in part, explain why there is a fairly large portion of the Islamic world which believes that most Jews are evildoers. There are obviously political reasons for anti-Semitism in the Islamic world as well. It's certainly not purely a matter of appeals to the Quran. But it seems unlikely that the Quranic passages are not a factor. So it's still good to know what the Quran says about Jews and people of the book more generally, and so I'll read on from another passage from the Table Surah. The Jews have said, God's hand is fettered. Fettered are their hands, and they are cursed for what they have said. Nay, but his hands are outspread. He expends how he will. And what has been sent down to thee from thy Lord will surely increase many of them in insolence and unbelief. And we have cast between them enmity and hatred till the day of resurrection. As often as they light a fire for war, God will extinguish it. They hasten about the earth to do corruption there, and God loves not the workers of corruption. But had the people of the book believed and been God-fearing, we would have acquitted them of their evil deeds and admitted them to the gardens of bliss. Had they performed the Torah and the Gospel and what was sent down to them from their Lord, they would have eaten both what was above them and what was beneath their feet. Some of them are a just nation, but many of them, evil are the things they do. This passage in the Table Surah indicates that there is a reason for God punishing the people of the book by increasing their unbelief, and the reason is their failure to follow the Torah and the Gospel, Al-Injil in Arabic, that God gave them as guidance. The last part of this passage states that some of the people of the book are righteous, and also that many of them are evildoers. This may be a reflection of the fact that the Prophet Muhammad had both good relationships with some groups of Jews and quite literally embattled relationships with other groups of Jews. He would have had personal experience to explain why some of them were good and others were not, given the political situation at the time. There are further references to unbelievers, Sabaeans, and Christians and Jews in the Surah, the Pilgrimage, Al-Hajj in Arabic. As in many passages in the Quran, there is a strong emphasis on the quite different outcomes for believers and unbelievers that I'll read to you now. God shall surely admit those who believe and do righteous deeds into gardens underneath which rivers flow. Surely God does that he desires. Whosoever thinks God will not help him in the present world and the world to come, let him stretch up a rope to heaven. Then let him sever it, and behold whether his guile does away with what enrages him. Even so we have sent it down as signs, clear signs, and for that God guides whom he desires. Surely they that believe, and those of Jewry, the Sabaeans, the Christians, the Magians, and the idolaters, God shall distinguish between them on the day of resurrection. Assuredly, God is witness over everything. Hast thou not seen how to God bow all who are in the heavens and all who are in earth, the sun and the moon, the stars and the mountains, the trees and the beasts, and many of mankind, and many merit the chastisement, and whom God abases, there is none to honor him. God does whatsoever he will. These are two disputants who have disputed concerning their Lord. As for the unbelievers, for them garments of fire shall be cut, and there shall be poured over their heads boiling water, whereby whatsoever is in their bellies and their skins shall be melted. For them await hooked iron rods. As often as they desire in their anguish to come forth from it, they shall be restored into it, and taste the chastisement of the burning. The visceral and graphic descriptions of the tortures of Jahannam remind me somewhat of one of the Buddha's discourses and the various artistic depictions of hell dimensions in Buddhism. As before, unbelievers, Christians, and Jews are mentioned in the same passages, making it difficult to deny that there is a meaningful connection between the fate of unbelievers and the people of the book. But in this passage, unbelievers are mentioned separately from the people of the book, whereas in other passages they are mentioned together. So it's understandable that Islamic scholars have differing views about whether or not Christians and Jews are unbelievers. There is no perfect consensus as to the answer to that question, though Christians and Jews have often been treated more leniently than other religious groups by Muslims who conquered their lands. And this lack of consensus is a reflection of the various Quranic narratives that speak of Jews and Christians in sometimes more positive and sometimes quite negative terms. In one passage suggesting that they will be rewarded by God for their righteousness and belief, and in another passage suggesting that they are evildoers or unbelievers whose fate is the fire. Yet there are some things that are very clear in the Quran. 1. Unbelievers are destined for a torturous hell. 2. Jews are covenant breakers and murderers of the holy prophets, and many of them are evildoers. 3. Christians who claim that Jesus is the Son of God are unbelievers, which is the overwhelming majority of Christians. And 4, it's also clear that Muslims are called by God to befriend their fellow Muslims and avoid falling in with Christians and Jews who might cause them to stray from Islam. This passage makes me even more grateful for my friends who are Muslims because they are taking a serious risk by befriending me, according to the Quran. These passages may be interpreted in various ways, through contextualization and cross-referencing the passages with various hadith, for example, because there really isn't a central magisterium that can adjudicate the different interpretations. And as with most religious texts, the interpretation is usually made in light of our existing beliefs about morality and politics. So it's inevitable that some Muslims will prefer to emphasize the more negative passages about unbelievers, Christians, and Jews, while other Muslims would prefer to emphasize passages that aren't so negative. Well, we've now come to the end of the podcast, and I hope you found it helpful in understanding the Quran and the Islamic tradition's understanding of who the Jews, Christians, and unbelievers are, and what their fate is in the end. On the next podcast related to the Quran, I'll examine what the Quran says about women, which I think may surprise some people. As always, if you subscribe to the podcast, then you can listen to it as soon as it's published, rather than having to wait until I get it posted with the sources. Thanks so much for listening, and have a wonderful evening.